I'm joined in the studio by Boboya James Edmond, and he is the Executive Director for Institute of Social Policy and Research. Good morning, Boboya. Thank you so much for making our time to speak to us today.
Yeah, good morning, and nice to having me here this morning.
Right. So just kindly analyze to us the contents of the national budget.
Yeah, thank you so much again. The national budget actually covered a wide range of activities. And most of these activities, for example, begin with the sort of understanding the context of South Sudan. And I'll talk about that. What do we mean when we talk about the context of South Sudan when it comes to budget development in that arrangement, also passage. And we also talked about is to do with performance of the financial year. For example, how did the last year financial budget perform and adding into this year?
Right.
And then as is to do with the microeconomics outlook of South Sudan and how that sort of either positive or negative impacting in the national budget development process. And then other issue that the budget looked at is to do with the different economic policies. And that's very important because that's actually where we as an piece of research fall in. So the analysis on those policies and which new policy that needs to come in to sort of help in that. And basically, when we talk about the policy, we're talking about issues that the government needs to do in order to improve the economy so that when we talk about revenue, it sort of finances the budget. That is to do with the different policies are first of all the fiscal policy that the budget look at, and it's to do with the different exchange rates and how that's going to impact in that. It's to do with the monetary and financial sector analysis that was sort of carried out and the policy that sort of impact that, and that is to do with the debt and aid relief, because one of the biggest issues in South Sudan is that South Sudan has been borrowing a lot of money, and they have no plan of how this can be, you know, repaid.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue with aid, because the aid that comes in from international institutions basically is to also finance the budget, but obviously the government doesn't need to pay back.
Right.
So they need to have a plan of that money can be, you know, supposed to be earmarked to sectors that sort of produces more to add into the economy and therefore have a disciplined budget. And that is to do with the structural reforms that the agreement, the South Sudan Revitalized Agreement, which is now part of the roadmap, is trying to sort of say, okay, well, you cannot spend budget if you don't look at some of the economic reforms that are required. And that is to do with now the revenue estimates and the measures that the government needs to put in place, because those are very important in terms of legislation. I talk about policy, this is something else, but legislation that comes in. And of course, the legislation, we have the financial bill, which I'll talk about later on, and we have the Appropriator Act that talks about how this money needs to be spent in accordance with the law. So the other issue also to do with the budget, we're also talking about the expenditures measures. How do we spend this money? And obviously, it's something that we'll be talking about. But I just also want to highlight in terms of what are the areas of the budget looking like when it comes to financial year 2022-2023. So basically, the past budget looked at sectors such as the accountability sector. They look at the economic function sectors. I'll give key examples later on what those processes look like. They look at the education sector, for example, the health sector, infrastructure sector, the natural resources sector, and then allocation to public administration, and also the rule of law. And the other two elements that the budget look at is basically also to do with the security sector and the reform that comes with that, and then the social and humanitarian sector. So that is how the budget play about when it comes to some of those issues.
Right, and those are some of the contents that were there. But yes, now the budget has passed the three legislative stages in the National Assembly. Now it awaits the President's signature. Am I right?
Correct.
Right. So how representative is this budget for to the layman who's listening to you?
One of the things we've been doing is there's this terminology we say it's pro-citizen budget.
Right.
A budget is supposed to is supposed to finance key South Sudanese citizens' needs. And those key South Sudanese citizens' needs are needs related to education, needs education to health. The road sector is completely dilapidated, so therefore it's important to put a lot of money on the roads so that we have access to roads. The budget is supposed to boost the economy so that the lower level South Sudanese can get access to money, and therefore they're able to thrive through the tree of the economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
The budget is supposed to improve our GDP, and therefore anything that we do is supposed to add up into our own pockets, so that we can. The other issue that also the budget needs to look at, is supposed to look at the issue about employment. Because right now there's a huge unemployment issue in South Sudan. There are a lot of international people who come and practice this kind of subsistence businesses in Juba, whether they succeed or not. But there's no mechanism in which our own women and youths could get access to this budget. So if we're able to see some of those issues being financed, then we say it's a citizen budget, and therefore it's a budget that is meant for the South Sudanese.
So have these things been highlighted?
It is not proper. At some point, I'll talk, give an example. At some point, they have been articulated, but it's not anchored in policy. It's not anchored in legislation. It's not in any government program. It's not in line with the National Development Plan that has been passed.
Right.
Citizens' voices in what they regard as their own budget is not completely reflected. We try to get some of the voices into this process, but obviously there's a lot of political issues here. And, and I think one of the biggest issues that also happened is that, you know, there's a huge disconnect between the parliament and the council of ministers. The priorities the council of ministers do there are not really in line with what people are trying to say, because this is not a bottom-up budget process. It's something that, you know, they call it a ceiling, where the Ministry of Finance, they just look at how much that particular institution is supposed to get, and then they earmarked. And then, two times now, last year, the budget was, you know, at some percentages, but then hugely, the parliament started to increase it, but about more than 80 billion.
Wow.
More than 80 billion. So, because the idea was that since the parliament have increased their own salaries, and then there was also cry of the civil servant salary, so therefore, let them just do that kind of budget increase.
Right.
The same thing also happens from here, where the current budget, the one that was presented by the Minister of Finance to Parliament, was 1.3 trillion. The Parliament decided to increase it to 1.4 trillion. And we talk about the implication that comes with that.
Let's just dive right into it. But what are the implications?
Yeah, the implications is that, you know, Parliament has no proper understanding about issues. I know the specialized committees in Parliament have a kind of understanding about what the needs are, but those needs needs to come from the mother institutions. For example, we have the Ministry of Health. They know exactly what are the
lacking
issues affecting health. We've seen the strikes in the hospitals.
Right.
We've seen the plight of the doctors, the nurses. We've seen the plight, ambulances, access to medicine, things like that. We want to make sure that those institutions sort of provide their priority list. Those priority lists from a bottom-up perspective then are costed, and that becomes the expenditure, the budget plan for the Minister of Health. The same thing we're talking about education. 90% of the education budget now comes from the international community.
Right.
You know, and they're the one paying salaries for some teachers, rehabilitating schools and things like that, buying chalks and books, things like that. So I want the Ministry of Education to be able to cost this. And then that becomes the plan.
So why isn't this the approach we are taking?
Because there's no interest in, we talk about two elements, decentralization and federalism, which is two confusing things. There is no interest from the national government in allowing institutions to do their work. There's a lot of control. There's a lot of lack of will. There's a lack of understanding on how institutions are supposed to function and how budget process is supposed to happen. In other countries, they're supposed to have the National Development Plan. This National Development Plan came as a bottom-up. I mean, functions, for example, the local governments have their own budgets. They come to the national, state governments have their own budget, and then the national government. So it becomes like one budget, something that civil society, communities, and government sort of, you know, discuss what needs are there. And then this end up into the national budget, which then goes into cabinet, and the cabinet then takes it to parliament. Then parliament needs to spend, it's 40 more days that the law says, the constitution envisioned parliament to have discussing this budget. So they discuss those issues that came from bottom up. And then For example, if our members of parliament are supposed to be elected members of parliament, they came from those constituencies, yeah. They know what their needs are. Their job is now to influence how much resources needs to go to those sectors,
particular sectors
that in
yeah.
fact that will make sure that their constituency is better off, right?
Right.
Those are the gaps. And we are working with parliamentarians, with the minister, I mean the specialized committee of finance, to make sure that that happens. But the problem is, because there's a shadow from cabinet on what they needed to do, that becomes a bigger issue.
Right. Well, speaking of pro-citizen budget, and you spoke about, I mean, there's one thing that is coming out strongly. There are reports that the budget has not included the proposed salary increment for civil servants. What do you make of this?
No, they have put some money there. And that's one of the biggest issues, because you cannot say, I want to build a house without a plan.
Right.
So there was no plan. Government have, they just had an assumption that probably something to do with the 500 billion SSP could be enough to enhance the salaries of the civil servants and the security sector. And they have no idea whether this is going to finance. For example, I asked some of the parliamentarians, are you talking about financing the army that is going to be integrated, the unified forces?
Right.
Are you focusing on that as a priority, or it's another force that's out there? They have no idea what it means by enhancing the salaries of the security sector.
Mm.
When it comes to the civil servants, first of all, it's difficult to know how many people are employed as civil servants.
Right.
Do we have ghost workers? Do we have real legitimate list?
So you have to verify.
Yes, and then though, if in a modern democracies where systems are working place, you know that is a legit salary scales, and you know how much your percentage is supposed to be increasing.
Yeah.
I mean, a year plus ago, President talked about 300%. For example, if you get 1,000 SSP, you should be getting 3,000 SSP.
Which still doesn't match up
with
the market.
It's significant.
Yes.
It's very insignificant. So a formula needs to be found, and this formula then needs to inform the budget increase. And you cannot talk about budget increase without looking at the resource envelope. And that's the reason why there was this deficit of about 500 and something billion of money that is not, they don't know how to get funds to finance that, you see. Despite the fact that they have costed the oil, they have costed the non-oil revenue, they have costed the money from coming from other aids to support that, but still they don't know where to get the rest. And the worst thing is that, and I've been talking to most of the policy experts when it comes to budget, and especially the Minister of Finance, both at Central Equatoria and also at a national level, is that, you know, the economy is not doing good. So even if you do taxes to finance this budget,
it won't add up. The gap,
yes,
yeah.
Because we I don't know if we really have like a formal economy, or it's beginning to become formal in South Sudan, because most of our markets are not functional markets. So therefore, when we talk about taxation, it becomes very difficult, I mean, to run through this process.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you see this country adequately supporting its own budget through generated revenue?
I would say that if there's a good behavior, especially when there's leadership from the president himself going down to the Minister of Finance.
You mean?
I mean like accepting that, okay, we've been to other countries, they love getting the local revenue to finance a budget. And this budget needs to go into the budget itself. You don't need to say, we have passed the budget, and then you go to the revenue authority to ask for money. The role of revenue authority is not to
finance.
Yeah, it's to get to raise the revenue,
right.
Give it to the Minister of Finance and the Bank of South Sudan. And it's the Minister of Finance that then finance. They have to transfer. And I've been talking about this to many people. I said, we have to transfer money meant for the parliament to the parliament account. Money meant for Minister of Health goes to Minister of Health.
Yeah.
Money meant for Minister of Education, Minister of Defense, Minister of Agriculture, Minister of Tourism.
All the ministries.
It has to go to the account and they have to spend. The good news is that before this budget was passed, we worked with the parliamentarians, the Institute of Social Policy worked with the parliamentarians to make sure that they give conditions of how this money is going to go. Now there's an agreement of quarterly, every 3 months, they're going to send the money to the institutions. The institution needs to account this money back before they get the next transfer. If that happens, then you begin seeing institutions begin doing their job.
Right.
But of course, there's this disease called corruption.
Mm-hmm.
We have to begin working with these institutions on how they can curb corruption. We work with parliamentarians to make sure they increase the budget for the Anti-Corruption Commission. They have increased something at least, but the law is not properly strengthened. So one thing that they have to do is to strengthen the Anti-Corruption Commission to be able to understand their role in sort of following up where this money is going.
Right.
Yeah.
There's something you spoke about. I mean, that these ministries, the money has to go into their account. So how does it work then? Do these ministries, on the contrary, go to the Minister of Finance and fetch the money from there?
Correct. Throughout, it's before we got our independence and until today,
mm-hmm.
if you're sick, it's in the budget. The budget meant for this particular minister. For example,
if he was a minister or as a staff ministry.
Yes. So you write a request, then this request is sent to the Minister of Finance, and the Minister of Finance will give you the money. It's not automatic. That the law says you have, for example, let me just give you this example. We have the Minister of Education, right?
Mm.
The education sector has been allocated 112 billion SSP.
Yeah.
If this money is supposed to be earmarked on quarterly basis, you divide this money by three quarters or four quarters,
mm.
you begin wiring this money direct.
Into their account.
To their account.
Mm.
And then you publish that, okay, we have sent this amount to the Minister of Education. And this money is meant for ABCD activities.
Right.
Those institutions under the Minister of Education will begin spending the money. And then the public will know that this money is already the Minister of Education. Then they start holding those institutions accountable.
Mm.
That is not the practice right now. For example, there are certain practices where money was sent, supposed to the Minister of Education at the state level. The governors gang up and they want to keep the money in their office. So they don't allow the institutions mandated by law to do their job.
Mm.
And this is bad practices. It's a bad behavior. It's poor governance. It's something that will not add up. And for example, that we are part of East African community, we're supposed to live with the spirit of those principles.
Right.
Right. And I think we've been working. There's already a kind of happiness from parliament, but of course parliament is not the expenditure budget, right?
No.
Yeah, it's by the end of the day, the people who spend the money is basically the government who runs most of the program government activities.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about inappropriation and corruption, in most cases, governments may come up with a well-intended budget, but they face difficulties on implementation because of misappropriation. What would your message be on these spending agencies of the government?
Yeah, I think because there are no punitive measures, and as I told you, the law doesn't sort of really get these guys into become more disciplined. So what we needed to do is that there's need for a mechanism of how institutions need to spend their money.
Mm.
And one of the mechanism is that the ones we have just talked about, where you're given money for 3 months, if you're not able to account this money, it may take you long to get money.
Right.
So that can be one. But this has to be, government has to really make sure that this is put into practice. And genuinely put into practice. And the other aspect, obviously, is that no books are prepared because there's no settlement of accounts. So because of that, the institution that's supposed to audit, the audit chamber, couldn't audit this. Mm. This. So there are a lot of audits recommendations that the governments and parliament needs to work together to get legislation that could strengthen that process. Because I promise you, and I promise the people of South Sudan, if you don't have real budget, it's difficult to develop this country.
Yeah.
Yeah. You cannot pass a budget and spend 300%. You're given 100 million, you spend a billion. I mean, even in your own house, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. So if people, they know for sure that it doesn't work that way, but they go ahead to do the expenditures. We did, by the way, we did an analysis, we'll share with you as shortly, of the last year budget, where we saw the office of the president receives more money than the council of states. The parliament now has a lot of money compared to the transfer to the states. We have 10 states plus 3 administrative areas.
Mm.
The public administration is one of the blattered activity of the budget.
Mm.
And we tell them, much as you talk about increasing people's budgets, you also need to increase the service delivery money, because it's not about, in South Sudan there are three budget categories. We have the budget that is for operational cost of government so that government can operate, and then we talk about salaries.
Mm.
Throughout, there's been very little money meant for service delivery. So we're talking about now, let us increase the service delivery money so we can be able to see, for example, this year we can tarmac 300 kilometers of road.
Mm.
Next year with tarmac another 300, we have 600 kilometers of road. But it shouldn't be one road
that we focus on.
Yes. Like, we spent almost all the resources for the country on the Barakaza Road. If we would have divided that money, maybe the corruption would have been lessened. Because, you know, if you spread contracts, maybe people would have done, maybe they would have done the Ye Road, maybe they would have done the Nimule Road, things like that. And we've been telling them, Juba is not South Sudan.
Yeah.
Because the focus of government right now is that if Juba is secure, if Juba is receiving services, therefore, South Sudan is. There are lots of other areas out there that really requires government real support.
Right.
And this will only happen when you have a pro-people's budget.
Mm. So how would you prepare the citizens then, based on this budget?
Yeah, what we have been doing is that throughout we've been educating the citizens to understand the budget, the figures, the percentages. We've been having dialogues with the parliamentarians to sort of educate the citizens on some of those issues. We also come to radio stations like this to sort of educate them.
Mm.
The problem is, I don't know what's going on in South Sudan where people, they know the information, but they don't rally together to discuss.
Mm.
So having some of those forums would be very good. And even yesterday, I was speaking to the chair of the specialized committee on the finance, and I told him that let us have this budget published. Let us have this budget published. If there are resources even to translate it,
yeah,
let's just do that, so that people know. You know, there's nothing they can... I mean, everybody now know there's $1.4 trillion, SSP budget. And budget transparency is one key aspect that could help people to participate in the processes. Yeah, so I think that's one thing that we urge the government and parliament to work together to do that.
Right.
And if the president is happy with this budget, probably this week he will sign off the budget. If he's not happy, then he will just maybe continue to hang on for some time.
All right. Yeah. James, thank you so much for making out time to speak to us today. What would your message, final message, be to the government?
No, my message to the government is that, we are a country. We are a sovereign country. We have institutions. We have structures. We have the constitution. And much as the constitution is sort of now is in fulfillment of the Batalha's Peace Agreement, the government needs to genuinely be able to, you know, come out and do the reforms that are required. Because if we cannot do those reforms, we will not be able to progress.
Mm.
You know, we have to have a baseline and a progress. And I'm confident in the President Salva Kiir that he will accept the ideas coming from civil society and from the policy experts such as mine, such as myself. Let him allow the institutions of government to function. If they're not being resources, let them be resources so that they can be able to do their job. If the legislation that are out there that have already been passed to enhance their work, let those legislation be sort of be fast tracked.
Hmm.
And the other issue is that if there are no people that are more competent to work in government, I mean, there are a lot of South Sudanese, even others in diaspora, let them be attracted back home and help work in government so they're able to provide, you know, high-level expertise in some of those issues.
Yeah.
Because by the end of the day, what he wants is that if there are service delivery, if people are happy, all the credit goes to him as a president.
Mm-hmm.
And also, parliament needs to work together because, you know, that parliament is not one entity. There are a lot of political parties there. Let them work as a united party. One of the things that basically we've been doing was work helping the parliament to understand that by the end of the day, they work as one institution.
Mm.
Because there's no oversight of IO or SPLM. So we are urging Parliament to also play the oversight role. One thing that we also want to say is that let the judiciary also play its role, because some of the issues that requires law enforcement, it goes to the judiciary.
Right.
But the judiciary is the most under-financed. Like we saw 2 days ago, presidents donating vehicles. It's not supposed to be the president donating vehicle, because the legislation, the judiciary has its own budget. They can put their budget for vehicles, and they have to go through a public procurement process to get those vehicles. Public must know that there's a tender that is out there, that people procure vehicles, this type of vehicle. People have to criticize this, but this is lacking, you know. So we're not a government of donation, but we should be a government of providing real services in accordance with the law.
Boboya James, thank you so much for your
time. Thank you so much for hosting me.
Right. Okay. 27 minutes to the top of the hour. Boboya James Edmond is the Executive Director for Institute of Social Policy and Research, and he has been dissecting the budget and letting us understand more on the content and the way forward.